And now we're ready to begin chapter 24 of 2 Samuel. Just as the previous chapter gives some of the last words of David, so this chapter 24 gives some of the last works of David. Not his best works, because they're works that are motivated by pride, consequently they're sin. But David repents. God places a punishment upon the nation and upon Israel because of this. But after David's repentance, then he turned and did the first works again, so he finished well. The first verse of chapter 24, "And again the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, Go, number Israel and Judah." So the first thing we see here is that the anger of the Lord is kindled against Israel. We're not told precisely what caused God to be angry with Israel, but for some reason he was. And of course, as we can see, he had reason to be angry with Israel. They had recently rebelled against David. They had routed him from the throne in the matter of Absalom. They had also had this man named Sheba to rise up and cause another unnecessary rebellion against David. So the people's heart was not right. We can see that they were not truly following what God wanted. And so for some reason then, God had anger against Israel. And because of this anger that he has, there's going to be some kind of punishment given to them. But at the same time, we see that he states that he moved David against them to say, Go number Israel and Judah. Now, it appears from the reading here that God provoked or moved David to sin, because this numbering of Judah is going to be a sin. However, as we read the account given in 1 Chronicles 21 and 1, we see how that explained a little bit more clearly. There it says, "And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel." So it wasn't God that caused David to sin. It wasn't God that moved David to sin. But what happens is God simply allowed David to sin. It was Satan who stood up against Israel, and it was Satan who provoked David to do the sin of numbering Israel. But because God was angry with Israel, he allowed this to happen. He permitted David to be moved to sin so that he then could bring about a punishment of Israel, and also he would punish David for his sin. Now the sin was to go and number Israel and Judah. And here again, we know definitely from the reading that it was a sin for David to do this, although it's hard for us to know exactly why it was sin. And there have been many reasons given by Bible scholars as to why this was a sin. Maybe the numbering wasn't done properly. Maybe it wasn't done according to the law. Maybe it went against God's original statement that they would be innumerable as the sand by the seaside. Maybe it had to do with the fact that David wanted to levy taxes. There are many reasons given, but the most probable reason for this numbering being a sin is the fact that it was given as a result of David's pride. David wanted to vaunt himself all the more by knowing how many people he had. He wanted to be able to say and to state to others the number that was in the nation, so that he could use this as a bragging point. He could use this as something to lift him up, use it as a source of pride. So it was a sin then for David to do this. But he did give the command to go and number Israel and Judah. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, "Go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people." So the command is given to Joab to do this, from Dan to Beersheba, number all of them, from the very southernmost point to the very northernmost point of this nation. And the reason is given here, that I may know the number of the people. And although this on the surface seemed like an innocent enough act to just get the number of the people, there was a pride at the base of it. David was motivated by evil intentions here, and so then the whole thing becomes a sin, and it is very displeasing to God. Verse 3, "And Joab said unto the king, Now the Lord thy God add unto the people, how many soever they be, 100-fold, and that the eyes of my Lord the king may see it. But why doth my lord the king delight in this thing?" So Joab argues back with the king, and he gives him some reasoning. He doesn't become insolent. He doesn't defy the king. But he just uses this line of reasoning, that the Lord has multiplied this people. He's added to them a hundredfold, however many soever they be. They've been greatly multiplied. And you've been able to see this. There's no question about it. You know that the Lord has done this. You know that the Lord has blessed this nation this way. So why do you delight in this thing? Why do you want to revel in this thing of the people being increased in number? Why do you insist upon having a head count? Why do you insist upon being able to know exactly what it is, as though you doubted somehow or other that the Lord had blessed the nation this way? And Joab tries to reason with David that there's no need for this. This is just satisfying a desire on your part that is not a necessary thing at all. We're doing a needless act, and it's just simply satisfying pride. But David didn't listen to Joab. Verse 4 says, "Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host." So there seems to have been others that also rebelled against this command. They didn't really rebel, but that is, they objected to it, and they had good reason for it. And the command of David, though, prevailed against all of their objections. He still insisted that these people be numbered. And, of course, as we've said before, this was simply to satisfy David's pride. David wanted to be able to gloat. He wanted to be able to boast about the fact that the nation had grown so much, and he wanted to precisely be able to number how much it had grown. So we see that many times an act that may be an innocent act on the surface, such as numbering the people. Even Moses was allowed to do this. If it's motivated out of pride, if it's motivated by some sinful desire on our part, then this act may become a sinful act, simply because we have the wrong motive in it. And it may look good on the surface, but if we're motivated by the wrong thing, then the whole act becomes sin. So we have to be most careful with our actions in this life. Some things that we may do that appear on the surface to be so innocent, yet if we have a sinful motive at the base of it, then the whole act becomes sin. We may do something to someone that looks like that we have a real honorable motive on the surface, but ultimately we may have an ulterior motive to get some kind of gain, some kind of need to be satisfied that really is a sinful thing. And so the whole act then is tainted by that improper motive. So the king's word prevailed against Joab. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. They set about on this task of numbering the people as David had commanded that they do. Verse 5 tells how that they went throughout all the land. They passed over Jordan and pitched in Aroer on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer. So they went over to the regions beyond Jordan first. They started in that area. And then they went northward from there. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tahtimhatshi, and they came to Danjan and about to Zidon. So they went up to the northernmost part of this country east of the Jordan, and they came back across to the area of Dan, and they went over to Zidon or Sidon. Verse 7, and came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites, and they went out to the south of Judah, even to Beersheba. So they now they'd gone from east and west, north and south. Verse 8, so when they'd gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. So they spent over 9 months doing this numbering. They went throughout all the land, and the last place to number now was the city of Jerusalem. They finally came to Jerusalem. It was the finishing point of the numbering, and they'd been over 9 months doing this now. And why Jerusalem is reserved to last, we do not know precisely that, but it was the last place to be numbered. Verse 9, and Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people unto the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. We learn in 1 Chronicles chapter 27 that David didn't number the men that were under the age of 20. So these are the men that are adult, mature men, the age of 20 or over, and there is 1,300,000 throughout the nation, 500,000 in Judah, and 800,000 in the rest of Israel. But now that David has received a number, he's had an opportunity now to gratify his pride, to satisfy his need to know, so that he could have something to really concretely brag about. Immediately when he receives this, he realizes that he's done the wrong thing. Verse 10 says, "And David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people." David realized that he'd done the wrong thing. He'd done this as a matter of pride. He didn't have any good reason for it. His reasoning was improper. And so his heart smote him. That is, he condemned himself, his own conscience, his own mind. I had enough of the teaching of God, enough of the realization of what God's true will was, that he realized he'd done something wrong. And David said unto the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in that I have done." So David admits that he is wrong. He goes to God in a penitent manner. He goes to God confessing that he's a sinner, that he's done something wrong. And he says, "And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly." Now this was a very foolish act in David's own words. He'd done something that was iniquity. He'd done something that had greatly displeased God, and he realized this. And he begs God to take the iniquity away. Now we know, though, that sin has its consequences. Even though God is willing to forgive, even though we will not have to lose our soul as a result of the sin, many times we're going to have to suffer the consequences of the sin. And so it is here. David had now given God just cause and reason to bring punishment upon him. And since God already had something against the people of Israel, since we begin the first verse of this chapter by saying that again the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, he uses this opportunity then not only to punish David but also to punish the people. He's going to accomplish a dual purpose now, punishing the people for whatever he had against them, whatever kindled his anger against them. And as we mentioned earlier, it could be because they'd been so unstable and so revolting against the order that God had set up for them. But at the same time, he's going to bring about a punishment of David. And now David realizes his sin. He asks for forgiveness. He repents. But as we mentioned, the consequence of this sin yet has to be brought about. Verse 11 says, "For when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying." Now David's seer, that is the man who was constantly giving him advice and receiving information from God for his benefit, his name was Gad, and so he met him in the next morning. When David came up the next morning, here was his seer, the prophet named Gad. "And the Lord said unto the prophet," verse 12, "Go and say unto David, Thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee." So now, because of David's sin, the Lord offered him three things that he could do as a punishment for the sin. One of these three things. So Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, "Shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies, while they pursue thee? Or that there may be 3 days pestilence in thy land? Now advise, and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me." So Gad gives him these three choices that are presented by God. And what it amounts to is, he can either have famine, the sword, or pestilence. God's three major ways of bringing about punishment on people, on nations, on those that are disobedient, on those that are ungodly. And David has a choice in one of these three. And none of the three is an easy choice. They're all very difficult. Famine. The land had just come through a 3 years famine, so it probably would not be the better choice, because the nation already was suffering from a famine they just had. Now, to add another 7 years to that would certainly be most difficult. The second choice is that his enemies should pursue him for 3 months, for this nation to be again ravaged by war, for David to be humiliated by the enemies being able to be victorious over him, that God had would have permitted them to do this. And God does use nations in this way. And David certainly did not want to be humiliated in that way. So he didn't choose that method either. And the third one then would be this 3 days pestilence. Now this would be a very swift punishment. 3 days of disease. And of course God can use sickness and disease in such a way as to bring anybody to their knees. Because he can bring about swift death this way. And David had that as one of the three choices. And so verse 14, David said unto Gad, I am in a great strait. Let us fall now into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great. Let me not fall into the hand of man. And so the one thing that he didn't want was this war. He didn't want man to come, even though he would be sent by God, even though he'd be an instrument of God used for this purpose. David said, let me not fall into the hand of man. So let me have the hand of the Lord. Let me have something that comes miraculously from God rather than to come from man. He thought he could stand maybe that kind of a humiliation much better than he could one where man would be involved in it. And so verse 15 says, the Lord sent a pestilence unto Israel from the morning even at the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. So the Lord sent the disease. That's what David seems to have requested. And he said it would send it for 3 days, and we're not sure just how long it did last. Some say that it lasted the 3 days, and some say that it lasted only 9 hours. But it was a short time, but it was swift destruction, swift punishment. There were 70,000 men that died. Now, 70,000 men would be almost 1 in 20 of the number that David had just gotten through numbering. And it would be half of a decimation of the entire nation. Now, not only did this punish the people for their sins, did this punish the people for having gone against God to take one out of every 20 by disease, but it also was a means of punishing David because it reduced greatly the number that he was so boastful about, the thing that he had as his pride, the thing that he held up as a matter of his great honor. It reduced the number. It took away part of this number that he wanted so badly. He seemed to be so desperately in need of knowing about. It took away a part of the number. So he punished then not only David, but also the people. He accomplished a dual purpose in bringing about this great pestilence. So we see another lesson here that shows very plainly that sin is not without its consequences. Whether it's the masses who are sinning, or whether it's an individual who sins, God has ways of bringing about some kind of a punishment, some kind of a chastisement because of it, and consequently we need to take that lesson to heart for ourselves today and realize that when we sin, we're going to have similar types of consequences. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.